Hello, and welcome to the Cinetific Institute. I am Professor Jason Harding.
And I'm Professor Aaron Sharp.
And on this show, we go out into the wilds and we capture a movie and we bring it back to the lab and we expose it to several different kinds of tests to see if the science in that movie holds up, whether it's good science or bad science. Isn't that right, Professor Sharp?
That is exactly what we do, Jason.
And if it's bad science, we put it down. We put it down hard. And then we bury it out back. Well, we put it in a biohazard bag and we throw it in a dumpster.
That's right.
And if it's... Yeah, there's one right now. Get it. Get it, Professor Sharp.
There it is right now. All right.
What, did you shoot it with your laser eyes? You told me you were working on them in the lab. I didn't believe you. That's impressive.
I did. They're actually light reflecting contact lenses.
That's great.
They destroyed the monster immediately.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's nothing there to study at this point.
And I'm going to have like a black dot in the center of my vision for like at least an hour and a half now because the light was really bright.
That's a drawback. Well, thank goodness that you don't need sight to record a podcast.
No, you don't need to see anything. You just need to listen to our sultry voices.
That's right. So, Professor Sharp, what movie beast are we going to examine this week?
Well, Jason, this week we have something very special. We have 1966's Fantastic Voyage.
Ooh, was
a very
the voyage
thrilling romp,
fantastic?
If I do. Oh, you stole my joke!
I didn't know! You didn't share all your joke notes with me! I'll take it back! There, now we're back in time. I didn't say it ever.
Well, Jason, it turns out that the Fantastic Voyage is indeed fantastic.
What a hilarious joke you made!
Why, thank you, Jason.
Well, before we jump into Fantastic Voyage, let's do this.
We were fucking wrong.
You know, just because we're super geniuses whose brains literally leak out of our heads because they're so big, doesn't mean we know everything, huh, Professor Sharp?
No, it means that we know 99.99% of all things, but once in a while we do get some things a little bit wrong.
It's amazing how that 0.001% seems to be massive gaps in our intellect. And there's nothing we like better than when you, the listeners, write us and let us know when we have been absolutely wrong, or if they had additional information about the movie or the science that we were presenting, don't we, Professor?
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Jason.
And so these are comments that were left on SoundCloud or through our Let Me Listen podcast website at the contact page that are commenting on the last movie monstrosity that we strapped to a table and electrocuted its nuts just to see what it would do. And that...
Jason!
Yes?
All of these descriptions... They're so violent.
Look, you do science your way. I do science my way. Don't tell me that you didn't think about strapping Armageddon up to a table and zapping its nuts with electricity.
Well, actually, the thought had crossed my mind. Yes.
There you go. So, the last show we did was Armageddon. And several people wrote in with additional information and to tell us that we were fucking wrong. And the first up is the Emperor Fabulous, who told us that a tempered steel drill bit will drill through iron. Or steel. And they make them to do just that. And you're absolutely right, because I forgot what our planet is made out of.
Yeah, I suppose, yes, that is true. At the speed that they drilled through it, I would say, like, possibly not. The thing about drilling with a tempered steel drill bit is you kind of want to allow the drill bit to take away the metal with its own weight, basically, with its own power. So it's cutting into the metal, right? Mm-hmm. So if you try to force that too fast through metal, like you've seen, it would actually burn out the drill bit far faster than it would burn out the engine powering the drill bit itself. So could you drill it drill through like that? Yes. But could you do it at those speeds? No, I don't think so.
No. Also, he'd like to point out that gunpowder, like most explosives, this is in response to can you shoot a gun in space? Mm-hmm. It says gunpowder, like most explosives, contain its own oxidizer. That's the potassium nitrate bit. So there's no air required, and that's how cartridges work without snorkels. So that's what the saltpeter is, I
think. That's a good point.
He'd like to point out that the people on Apollo 13 weren't doing, this is in regards to when they slingshot their way around the moon and they're pulling 11 Gs. I made the point that the people on Apollo 13 and the other people who did missions that allowed them to go around the moon weren't screaming the entire time while they were going around. He'd like to point out that they were firing their engines while they were doing it, and they were going much faster than the Apollo 13 crew. They weren't firing anything when they were going around the moon. So they were still relatively okay. They weren't pulling 11 Gs.
Hmm.
So, yeah, they still wouldn't be screaming.
No.
They'd be all unconscious. But... he would like to point out that of the three main types of known asteroids, metallic or M-type are the least common. About three quarters of known asteroids are carbonaceous. I think that's how you say it. Carbonaceous. However, if we decide that this thing is a dwarf planet, then things are a bit different. It wasn't a dwarf planet. Did it look like a dwarf planet? It looked
no.
It looked like a bunch of lava rock thrown together. It looked like a space monster.
It looked absolutely terrifying.
The Emperor Fabulous and Microbloggenism both point out that compressing gases has a tendency to make them hot. I said it makes them cold, which is the opposite of hot.
Okay.
I got my science mixed up because I thought that the way a refrigerator works is that as you compress it, you compress the gas in the coil in the refrigerator, that it cooled down, and that's what makes your refrigerator cold. That is not what it is. It is the release of that pressure that makes the coils cold.
And
if you notice that during the launches of several, the space shuttle, but more famously, more people would recognize this, during the Apollo launching, you see a bunch of stuff falling off of the rocket as it's launching.
Mm.
That's all ice. That's all ice buildup.
It's
very humid in Florida, and so moisture is collecting around the outside of the rocket, and then when it takes off, the sudden change in pressure causes the outer surface to freeze. It causes it to become very cold. It's not because it's compressed in there. It's the sudden change in pressure. So it causes the water that's condensing on the outside of the rocket to suddenly freeze and break off as it's taking off into the air. That's what that stuff is. Which is also, by the way, one of the reasons why the O-ring failed on Space Shuttle Columbia when it took off. Was because the O-ring was freezing, and then it became too frozen and became brittle and broke.
Oh,
and that's
wow.
what caused it to explode. Bummer, everybody. I'm sorry. But sometimes science is a bummer, right?
Sometimes science isn't always just amazing.
It's not all happy lambs and puppy dogs and lollipops. Sometimes it's hard truths that are difficult to swallow. It makes you sit up all night long.
I know. I still can't stop thinking about it.
Okay, Francois Lacombe said, in the movie, they called it compressed iron ferrite. That's what they said when they were trying to drill into it, which is basically cast iron.
Right.
Now, steel bits will drill through cast iron, but 800 feet in that short amount of time? I don't think so. Neither do I, and neither does Professor Sharp. Right, Professor Sharp?
No, I don't think that you could drill. You can drill through cast iron, but at those rates, it's highly unlikely. And the other thing that you have to also think about is that cast iron is extremely brittle. I don't know how that factors into anything, but it very well might. It might shatter like glass if you tried to drill through it. So,
maybe.
Creating more problems, fracturing, filling the hole. There's all kinds of problems
Jamming.
That can happen with it. Jamming, for sure, yeah.
In regards to Space Shuttle Independence crash landing onto the surface of the asteroid, he said, the crashing shuttle should have just bounced right back into space. That is absolutely right as well.
It makes for a real short movie, though.
Uh-huh. In regards regards to the when the Mir had one of its access tunnels severed by debris, and we said that it should have experienced decompression at that point.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I think they already sealed the hatches on the shuttle and the access tunnel when that happened. No, I rewatched that scene again. They clearly show that the access, that the space station is breached, and they were not yet into the other shuttle before launching away. The door was still open. And the minute that that tunnel got severed, they should have gotten sucked away. And then everyone else in the shuttle should have gotten sucked out. And then the movie would have been over.
And then the movie would have been over again. Making for another very short movie.
Yep. Francois Lacombe also said, for fun, I calculated how much energy would be needed to make Ceres miss the Earth from that distance.
Interesting.
If you split it in half, assuming 100% of the explosion's energy goes to moving the pieces, you'd need an explosion of 20 billion megatons.
Oh, wow.
That's an absolute minimum. You would never get 100% conversion, and the movie's asteroid is larger than Ceres, so the explosion would have to be much bigger. Thank you for doing the math.
Wow.
And he's absolutely right. The idea that one nuke, one conventional nuke, buried 800 feet at random on the surface of the asteroid.
It's just not possible. It would never work.
Would crack it into two pieces no matter where they put it.
No.
He states, now we said it's amazing that they seem to get to the moon in like 10 minutes. And he states in the mission briefing that they say the shuttles will take 67 minutes to reach the Mir and then 60 hours to reach the moon. They did. I missed it because mm-hmm. I wasn't really paying attention.
You know, like, the movie was only 67 hours long, so if we missed that bit of throwaway dialogue, I apologize.
Sir Kit-A-Lot is a new commenter. Hello, mm-hmm. Sir Kit-A-Lot.
Hello.
And he says, or she says, I think modern cartridges use an oxidizer as part of their propellant charge. This is in regards to bullets in space. So you can actually fire most modern guns underwater. That is true.
Wow, really?
Hmm. And now Sir Kit-A-Lot has some responses to the stunts from GoldenEye.
Oh, okay.
Because we brought it up in the We Were Fucking Wrong in the previous show in regards to the airplane stunt. Now, remember, the airplane stunt, airplane, no pilot, tumbles off cliff while the prop is engaged. James Bond jumps a motorcycle off the cliff and then skydives after it, get back in the plane, and then flies away.
A totally plausible stunt.
Right. I don't know why it's not an Olympic event.
Exactly. Really, honestly, that it should be right next to lacrosse or whatever.
The biathlon.
The biathlon, exactly.
So what Sir Kit-A-Lot says, well, if the aircraft was on zero throttle, which it was because there was no one in there controlling mm-hmm. the plane, and the flaps were deployed, which I believe it would have been, if the aircraft was taxiing, which it was, yes. I think, was it?
I assume so, yeah. I think taxiing just means that it's driving under its own power, I think.
Right. He said it would produce a lot more drag than a falling person and would therefore fall slower.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. I don't see why that wouldn't. Yeah, that definitely sounds about right.
Yeah. Sir Kit-A-Lot also said, actually, and this is in regards to the ejection systems of attack helicopters. And you always have to watch out for any comment. This is actually at the beginning, but okay, here we go. Actually, most attack helicopters do have ejection systems. The rotor blades are jettisoned a split second before the occupants eject. I think we mentioned that.
Yeah.
Unless the blades ejected, then a ejection system wouldn't work. Well, it turns out
we were fucking wrong on that again.
Someone thought of it. I said putting explosive bolts on the blades.
On the propeller blades, right. But I would have thought that those would have just created a giant razor blade wheel, like giant swords flying around in the sky that could cut apart anything. Like,
I don't think we're carrying on a battlefield if someone, you know, someone in Iraq's going, we hit the helicopter, and then they get hit by a blade as the pilots punch out.
I suppose.
But I think the other thing is my thought that they would put explosive on it doesn't make sense when it would just be an electric, it would be like an electric pin.
Hmm.
You know, the pins that would hold the blades in place would just pop out, and then the centrifugal force of the blades moving would have just thrown them away from the central point.
I suppose,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so no explosives needed. Thank you, Sir Kit-A-Lot.
Interesting.
We're dumb. Microbloggingism.
We're dumb, brilliant scientists.
Yeah. Microbloggingism says, small point, but the KPG extinction event 65 million years ago didn't kill the dinosaurs. We still have about 10,000 species of them alive today, and he means birds, and he's absolutely right.
Good point.
Dinosaurs did not go extinct. If anyone says the dinosaurs went extinct, you punch them right in the face with your fist of science.
Science fists. Most of them went extinct. I think
make
a couple
sure you
of
film
the,
it, yeah. And then freeze frame when you're punching them so that science fists can be flashed on the screen. Now, you brought up the fact that the Hubble can see all the way to the Kuiper Belt, where...
Yeah, I think I did, yeah.
Yeah, and it can. We have pictures of what of stuff that Hubble has found in the Kuiper Belt. Microbloggism says, I think you mean the asteroid belt. No, we meant the Kuiper Belt.
The Kuiper Belt is the Kuiper... I believe that there's two different belts of asteroids in our solar system. One of them is definitely called the Kuiper Belt, so...
And that's, like, the outermost part of our system. It's, like... That's where all the junk is.
Exactly.
Think of it. Think of that solar system as kind of like a trailer, like an old trailer up on blocks. And the inside of it is the solar system where all the planets are. And the Kuiper Belt is kind of like the car engine up on blocks and a bunch of garbage and recycling that's never going to get picked up. And
an old stove,
crack pipes,
a sink, a toilet with a bunch of flowers growing out of the top of it, for sure.
Rattlesnakes pinned to the outside. That's what the Kuiper Belt is.
Flamingos for some reason. Why do they always have flamingos out front of that? I don't know.
It doesn't matter. But yeah, we meant the Kuiper Belt. We knew what we were saying.
Yeah.
Okay, Micro? The Kuiper Belt. And someone brought this up because we made it sound like in our review of Armageddon that we thought the Mir space station wasn't a thing.
Did we say that?
We kind of made it sound like it wasn't. Here's the thing. Mir has been overshadowed by the ISS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But Mir existed before the ISS did. About 3 years after this movie came out, they allowed the orbit to decay and it burned up. It doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, wow.
But the Mir was an actual space station. It did exist. And if we made it sound like Mir wasn't a thing or was some made-up bullshit or they got the ISS wrong, that's totally on me because I think I was talking about it when we brought it up in the show. We know Mir existed.
Obviously.
We
Hello?
Also know that Mir didn't have gigantic tanks to hold extra liquid oxygen. they didn't need.
Yeah. That they use for a refueling station, which really, I mean, I'm not sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if you guys have noticed, I didn't read every single comment that we got because we got a lot of them this time. I had to pick out some of the best ones. Thank you for writing them. Please keep doing it. It's fantastic. And now let's do the movie.
Let's do this movie. I think we should do the movie.
Okay, Professor Sharp, you are always so good at researching the test subject. Could you please tell us the history of the test subject before I take out my scalpels and cut out its heart?
Why? Thank you, Jason. I would love to. 1966's Fantastic Voyage is a story about the brilliant scientist and Vladimir Lenin mummy stunt double. Because he just lays there the whole time. He doesn't move.
Maybe they used his actual corpse. You know, he was on display for a long time.
It's true. They might have just given him a shave, drawn a bunch of weird lines on his head, surrounded him with really, really stupid-looking toy radars that for some reason were able to detect radiation instead of sound because that's not what radars do. Anyway, I keep having a hard time trying to pronounce his name in the movie. Is it Jan Benes?
I don't know.
I don't know, but he's
the MacGuffin in the movie that they have to go into.
the guy. He's the guy. He's the body.
He's
anyway.
The guy who did a thing, and now we need him to not die.
Well, he was played by Jean Del Val, whoever that is.
Yeah,
so.
Who went on to a long career of playing dead guy who lays there.
Well, anyway, he develops a fucking shrink ray, and
he perfected it. Because
yes, that's right, he perfected it, right?
Because the plot line was that we were in an arms race about shrinking technology with the Russians, but we could never get anything to shrink for long. The smaller we shrank it, the least time that it would stay shrunk. And then this guy came up with the magic formula for making things stay shrunk.
Yeah, stay shrunk for a longer time, which was really important for their shrinking arms race.
The shrink army. you think that is small tank? Look at this, how small tank is.
I make tank even smaller.
I don't know why we do this. Why we make army small?
And it's not like Ant-Man rules where they keep their same like strength. They're just like regular dudes down there.
Yeah.
So basically, what he does is he allows his facility to defy all laws of physics for brief periods of time without creating a tear in space, destroying all life as we know it.
Stop it! Just do the plot.
Ben's, Jason's having an aneurysm. Ben's, who's
well,
working
it's just one of those things when you start saying it out loud, how stupid it is.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Ben's, who is working in communist Russia, is transported by the CIA to America, but is attacked en route. In order to save the scientist who has developed a blood clot in his brain, a team of Americans in a nuclear submarine shrink down to go inside of Ben's body, and thanks to various setbacks, ticking clock cliches, and other things like that, they have a finite period
secret
of time
spies.
To fix the clot.
What? Secret spies.
And secret spies. So they have to fix this before the miniaturization wears off. Can they do it? Will Ben survive? Spoilers, yes. Yes, they do. As I said before, the Fantastic Voyage is fantastic. See, I told you, I even wrote it into the script. Mm-hmm. It's fun, it's adventurous, exciting, and is referenced all over pop culture. I don't know if you remember this, but in Austin Powers, they have a scene where they're driving around in little cars, and he gets stuck at one point, and he has to go back and forth and stuff. I think that scene was directly ripped from this movie. I'm pretty sure that it was totally ripped off from there. And I think that this movie is nicely summed up by the words of Dr. Leonard McCoy from Star Trek 2009, when he said, "Space is disease and danger wrapped in darkness and silence." And it turns out that inner space is also diseased and danger, but it's actually really pleasantly lit, almost as though they were on a movie set.
Okay. All right, so remember, guys, this isn't a review of the movie. The movie
no.
is fun. The movie
it is.
Is fun.
It's a great movie. I love but it. I recommend it to everybody out there. If you haven't seen this movie, you have to see it.
It's so much fun. Mm-hmm. But this is a review of the science, and that can be a whole lot of not fun.
Yeah.
So where shall we start?
Do you want to start with the idea of shrinking anything in the first place?
That's the big cheese.
Okay.
You want to just start off with the big cheese?
Well,
let's start off. You know what? We really need to solidify how we do it. Are there any little science nitpicks that you would like to pop onto the audience first?
I have shrinking, and then the journey like through each organ, and I have problems with each organ, and then at the very end, because there's problems
with problems
let's
with
face
all
it
organs.
Every single organ has problems. They're all horribly inaccurate. And then at the end, I do have a just really quickly about the gadgets, which is just the submarine and the laser gun. So if you want, I can go through that. It's really quick.
Let's do the laser gun. Hey guys, okay. We've done lasers a lot on this show, haven't we?
Yes, we have. And it turns out that this one is not much different from the other ones we've seen.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go for it.
In the movie, they travel all throughout this guy, every part of his body. They're like, hey, it's the big toe. We need to be in the brain. All right. But when they finally get to the blood clot, they bring out the laser.
Yeah.
That works ostensibly underwater. They're in cranial fluid, I guess. Right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So they have a laser that works underwater, fine, I believe.
Sure. No, yeah, that can happen, absolutely.
Well, wait a minute, could it?
Couldn't it?
Light travels differently through water than it does through air.
Hmm.
Mainly because there's a lot more crap there to reflect the laser light back, right?
That is true. And I've actually heard that laser light could go slower through different types of liquids.
Yeah, but they gave him a laser because lasers. What does the laser in the movie look like?
It looks like a giant ray gun. As you do, because having it ship-mounted or anything like that wouldn't make any sense. We have to make it look like a ray gun, because ray gun, pew, pew.
You know what would have worked better?
What's that?
I don't know, a chainsaw? a sharp knife?
A
anything?
Katana?
I don't know. How about some sort of clot-dissolving agent that they just spray onto it?
That, you know, all of those things.
Oh, wait,
definitely...
why didn't they inject the clot-dissolving agent into the dude instead of shrinking people down?
You know what? While I was doing research for this, I actually found that there's this little, I didn't write it in because it really didn't end up working in anyway, but there's this little microbot that we've started to develop, we as in scientists like us.
You can, it's okay. We're working on it. Me
exactly.
And Professor Sharp.
Us, personally. And it
actually doesn't do anything. We just think it'll be funny to put robots in people.
Why? I mean, like, why not?
Every once in a while, you'll be watching TV, you'll just see it go across your vision.
You'd be like, was that one of those little floaty things in my eye, or is that a microbot? Turns out, microbot.
Microbot. So if you have one now, they've gotten out of the lab.
Well, apparently the scientists are trying to develop something similar to that, where it actually works as like a vessel. It carries, it's a little microbot that carries modified bacteria to a certain spot. And then when it gets to that spot, it'll release the little modified bacterias. It'll go in and it can attack the cancer kind of thing. So like that works. But the whole idea of breaking the all laws of physics just to make the thing smaller.
Well,
that's
part of the shrinking.
But we'll get to that later. So
the laser in this does not work. It doesn't work. It doesn't work, guys.
My question is, how is it powered? Was it nuclear? If it
magic.
Was, then why didn't everyone die?
All they said in the movie was that it was a laser.
Yeah.
That's it. Why are we working on shrinking technology if we have handheld lasers?
Exactly. If you want an in-depth description on why this wouldn't work, you can go to our episode on James Bond and you can listen to, we have an interview with a laser technician. It actually is extremely hard to make a laser like that because you need a large amount of power to be able to power the laser and all of these sorts of things. And I'm sure with it being even the size that it is, lenses act differently at smaller sizes and all that kind of stuff too. So all kinds of other problems would be created by having a tiny, tiny, tiny laser.
Right. So let's do the anatomy stuff.
Sure.
You want to do the anatomy stuff before we do the shrinking stuff?
Oh, I just want to say quickly about the submarine. That the submarine, it was meant to watch fish, not go slamming through the body at 100 miles an hour. And just so you know for the future, because this is going to come up, a submarine can't fly. And that's gonna be important later on in the show. So just keep that in mind.
Also, big windows don't work well in pressure.
Big windows don't, no. They definitely
big
don't
windows
work
don't
under
work.
Pressure.
That submarine could probably go down about maybe 10 to 15 feet. Anything lower than that, and it's going to pop like a balloon.
Just huge, huge windows. It's for, you know what it's for? It's for like going around inside the lake at Disneyland or something like that and just like looking at all the like the little fish floating by. That's all it's meant for.
It's one of the reasons why our deep water submersibles have tiny little windows about the size of a bottle cap. And not gigantic windows on them.
Exactly. So you want to talk about the biology of Dr. Jan Beans? Is that what we should do?
Yeah, because he has a pretty unique physiology if you think about it.
The thing about this movie is it seems to get, like, on the surface, it almost seems like it gets things right, but only on the surface, because as soon as you start to look a little bit closer, fucking everything is wrong. It's just so wrong.
You see, the inside of this guy's body is like a theme park ride at Disneyland. Made in 1966. Number one, I didn't know human beings had an internal lighting system, but he does.
That's incredibly true. Everything is just so beautifully lit in this movie. And did you notice
from
that?
From behind.
Like a lot of everything
behind
is
cell
green.
Walls. Where is that light coming from?
Yeah, exactly. Turns out inside of your body, it's kind of dark. I mean, there's no light that can get in.
No, not really. Maybe if you're up towards the skin, you'd have some diffused light coming in. But once you get past, I think, the seventh layer, it's pretty dark inside of our bodies. And in fact, our bodies don't really like sunlight all that much.
No, and if you've ever climbed inside of the hollowed out carcass of a tauntaun, you would know that the inside of a body cavity is actually really quite dark.
Don't remind me of the research we had to do for Empire Strikes Back.
We're not just some kind of like invisible fish creature that you find, that, you know, like it doesn't
all I'm
work.
Saying is that Han Solo has a remarkable gag reflex. Because there was more than just guts on the inside of that tauntaun, I'll tell you that much.
It makes you ask who shot first.
No, so one of the biggest inaccuracies is that once they're inside, it's pretty dark. Now, from a filmmaking standpoint, that makes sense, because it's a pretty boring movie if you can't see anything.
True enough.
Unless you're a talented filmmaker who knows how to make things interesting, you know, when it's dark inside body.
That
right?
would help. Yeah, that would definitely help. I don't think that it was anything of lack of talent with the film crew, because I think that they were pretty spot on. But, you know, 1960s, you gotta liven it up a little. You need to jazz this stuff up. And also, like, they didn't have the kind of technology that we did today, where we could just be in the dark.
That's impossible.
No,
turning off lights,
that's ridiculous.
We didn't discover that until 1982.
Exactly. In Terminator Judgment Day, that's the first time we turned off the lights, and we're like, hey, it's better to not know what's going on. Maybe you know what, maybe. Yeah,
can I ask a question?
What's that?
Why did they inject them where they injected them?
They injected them into the arterial system, and they were hoping that it was the fastest route to get them to the brain.
Wouldn't the fastest route to get them to the brain would be to inject them into one of the arteries in the neck? Oh, there's got to be a couple of arteries, really big ones, that they could easily inject into that go directly to the brain, right?
You would think so. You would definitely think so. I thought that they did inject them into the neck.
No, I thought they injected them into the arm or some shit.
No, we injected them into the neck. They had a little crosshair thing. I'm pretty sure. I mean,
did they?
Now you're making me question it, and now I'm gonna have to go
too.
Back and look.
Now I'm starting.
I'm pretty sure they injected them into the neck.
And how in the hell did they wind up in the heart?
So I have a list of the different organs that they go through in order of appearance.
That's
if
fine.
You want to go through that.
That's fine. I just have one other thing. The bloodstream that they're in.
Yes.
I had no idea that plasma was so crystal clear.
You know what? I wanted to know the exact same thing. That's one of the first things that I've noticed as well. And you know what? Just for a little bit of backstory, one of our commenters, Microblogginism, felt it was necessary to give me all of his notes on the movie because he's an actual biologist.
Yeah.
So, so some of the things that I may reference throughout the review, I got a little bit of help from him on. One of the things that he noticed was that the red blood count in the veins of our subject here, Dr. Beans, it was basically anemic.
I was going to say that he's anemic. He has no blood.
The red blood cell count in a normal human body should be around 45% blood volume. What would you say that he had?
I don't know, like one?
Maybe? Like not much.
There was not a whole lot of blood going on in his blood vessels.
And it looked a whole lot more like just the top view of a lava lamp than blood cells. I mean, the art department was really good. I mean, they did a great job for 1966, but that didn't.
Yeah.
That's not what. And do you know what else I noticed was wrong with the whole scene? Like right away, as soon as they got injected through the needle,
the lights behind the cell walls.
Okay, well, just after that.
What?
Why isn't the heart pumping them through the system?
I don't know.
Why isn't there
any rush hour traffic? They just move constantly.
Oh, of course, exactly. Because you see, when blood is going through the human body, it kind of goes through pumping. You know, the heart pumps.
You mean like a pulse?
Like a pulse, exactly. So when they're injected into Dr. Beans, he has literally no pulse at all. The blood flow isn't moving. They're just sort of floating there.
He's dead.
Exactly. So they do say that his heart is slowed down, but a little bit of science behind this. An adult human heart pumps roughly 2,000 gallons of blood a day. 2,000 gallons of blood per day works out to
Where do we get all that blood from?
Where do we get it from?
And where does it all go?
That's a great question. It gets circulated through our circulatory system. So 2,000 gallons works out to 83 gallons per hour, or nearly 6 quarts a minute. So basically, as soon as they got pushed through the needle into the body, they would have immediately sucked through the bloodstream and flushed them so quickly that they would have
wound up in the kidneys real quick.
Exactly. Like it only takes about a minute to have like the blood flow through your entire body. Like so, they would have smashed apart immediately. And that brings up one of my first concerns of this movie is that pretty much every single scene in this movie, if done with real science, would have resulted in death.
Yeah. At every point.
Pretty much at every point.
They never would have even made it to the body. No. But we are not getting to that point yet.
We're not getting there yet. But even if they did make it in the body, almost everything they did meant certain doom.
After they accidentally created a singlet and destroyed the Earth, we wouldn't be worried about Miss Dr. Beans.
So, other problems with their blood. As we said, they have possible anemia. Another thing is that they're basically hemophiliacs, he's basically a hemophiliac, because, like, no platelets stopped or went to go stop any of the blood flowing through any of the especially through the fistula, but anytime we've seen a cut, no blood went, no platelets stopped it. So,
he gets a spontaneous fistula that sucks them out of the vein.
Yeah.
And they don't go spilling out into some neck meat or wherever they were at.
No.
No. Where do they wind up?
They wind up in the venous system because...
How did that happen?
Well, an arterial... Sorry, an arteriovenous fistula is basically where a vein and an artery are able to connect to each other. And sometimes it happens through trauma. Most often it happens through genetics, stuff like that. So, and they can be so small that they are unable to be seen on scans. Thing is, though, is that fistulas don't look like that. They don't look like little rips in the vein. They are basically a connection of two veins. So they look like a tube, but not a rip.
Yeah. They would have seen it.
They would have
said, oh, look, a fistula, maybe.
Exactly, yeah. And also, if fistulas can become inflamed on the vein end, because basically the arteries would be pumping more blood into the vein than the vein can handle, and all kinds of complications can come from this.
Because our arteries are delivering blood that's being pumped fresh from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So they can take a little bit more pressure than the veins, which are delivering spent blood. I know that's probably not the scientifically accurate term, but so they're not under nearly as much pressure. They're on drawn pressure rather than push. So the difference between veins and arteries if you had a handful of veins and a handful of arteries on the outset, they wouldn't look much different, but they do very different jobs.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what, Lane, like all kinds of problems can happen. And I was actually speculating, though they don't say this in the movie, they were saying that it was because of the accident or whatever. I was speculating that because of this fistula, maybe that is what caused the blood clot to happen in his brain, but I don't think that would work I think that there's something called a blood-brain barrier, which would stop blood clots from entering the brain. I would need more information about that, but
people get blood clots in the brain all the time, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
it
actually, you're all right.
That's
about
what
that.
A stroke
I haven't heard about
is.
That before,
so. But see, the difference is that happens past the blood-brain barrier in the brain itself.
Right.
And also, a blood clot can travel from your leg to your brain. It can happen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's what apparently these fistulas, if they're large enough, and they are happening inside of your leg, that's a large reason why you do end up getting blood clots jarred loose and stuff like that. So,
yeah, exactly.
So they enter through the arterial system. They go through a fistula, which seems horribly, horribly dangerous and painful. And then they end up inside of the venous system. So now, Jason, did you notice something horribly wrong about the venous system?
Yeah, Raquel Welch wasn't naked nearly enough for me in the movie. They need to have her get naked for some reason.
Yeah, you know what? That is a definite drawback in the movie. But
I'm not saying that she didn't look great in that scuba suit, but oh boy.
Now, is that a scientific statement, Jason?
Nope.
I thought we were supposed to be examining the science.
Unless you
want to
study
booty.
The science of my boner. No, it's not. Sorry, but my scientific acumen goes out the window when I'm thinking about Raquel Welch.
Fair enough. Give her that laser gun and a tight scuba suit
all
any
I'm
day.
All I'm thinking about is the reproductive system.
Hey, you brought it back to science. That was
there we
nice.
Go.
Oh, right on.
No, what was the? What did you notice?
Did you notice that the blood cells were blue? so if you don't know out there,
there's a wives' tale.
blood, blood's not blue. It's always red. Even when it's deoxygenated, even in the absence of oxygen inside of a vacuum. Think about this. When you get your blood taken at the blood donating place,
that's venous blood.
Yeah, when they pull your blood out, it's under a vacuum. There's no air touching it, and it's still red.
No, it's
right?
still red. So, and it's venous blood. So
exactly. So it's not the blood that's bluish. It's actually the whole vein, including the walls. Think of it like, okay, so you have, think of it like having a yellow liquid inside of a blue glass. It'll look green basically through the light. It's
yellow liquid.
Yeah. So, or
I'm
if
picturing
you,
it.
Yeah, picturing it.
Raquel Welch holding yellow liquid in a blue glass. I would love some.
I would love whatever you're drinking, madam.
Pour it on you. Well, anyway, I'm sorry. Anyway, I took a little vacation.
That's all right, Jason.
What were you saying?
It was in the name of scientific exploration, I'm sure. Well, anyway, the blue liquid in a yellow glass would look, a yellow liquid in a blue glass would look green, right? It's the same thing with your veins.
Yeah.
When you're looking at your veins through your skin and through the through the walls of the veins themselves and everything like that, the dark color of the blood actually shows up to look blue through the veins, but that's not actually
that's
the cover
right.
of the blue. It's not actually.
And also, stupid children in your anatomy textbooks when you're in sixth grade, they just colored the veins blue, the venous veins blue, and the arterial ones red. It was just a point. They weren't trying to imply that half your blood is blue and half of it is red.
No, exactly. It's a good way to differentiate the difference between the veins and the arteries.
Otherwise, it just looks like a whole bunch of guts.
Exactly.
So what happens next? Where do they go on this fantastic voyage?
Okay, so after they go through the venous system, hijinks ensue, and they have to head towards the heart. They never planned to go towards the heart because it would be very scary and lots of turbulence and all kinds of problems.
They keep saying turbulence. They're saying there will be so much turbulence.
Right.
And that wasn't what was concerning me.
No. What was concerning you?
Pressure.
Oh. Really?
Why wasn't that little tiny ship cracking like an egg?
That's a good question because I think that I mentioned this earlier. Unlike Ant-Man, where they shrunk down and they kept their same strength and mass and weight, when these characters shrink down, they're just like regular people. So they don't have, and so you'd assume the same thing with the ship itself. So once that ship shrunk down, even a 6-inch bulkhead is going to be reduced down to the thickness of a piece of tinfoil, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And the pressure inside of the veins themselves, just the pressure alone of pumping the blood, would be pretty severe. And now they're gonna go into the heart.
Which literally takes the blood and pressurizes it and shoots it through the rest of the venous system at extremely high rates of speed, mind you, which they would have been crashing around the veins.
And so they get the great idea that they're going to put Dr. Beans in cardiac arrest.
Yes.
So that they can safely go through the heart.
Exactly. Hey, Jason, what happens when you shock a heart to stop it or start it again?
Well, that's the second part's totally maybe not going to happen.
But the first part, say you were to shock a heart, wouldn't you think that maybe it would violently contract, you know, as hearts do when being subjected to large amounts of electricity?
You would think a couple of them ventricles would close.
Yeah. So would that not be like another catastrophic way that this like whole little fantastic voyage would have ended with everybody dying?
Yeah. Yeah, you would think so. Or that they would just be outside of the heart and the ventricle is closed and they have no way to get through it.
Yeah, exactly. They could have been locked outside of the heart if they and really like they were communicating through the little tappity tip tap tap fucking thing or some kind of radio or some fucking thing.
Radio, what did they call it? I can't remember what they called it. Radio telegraph system.
Right.
That's how they were communicating.
Yeah.
Now here's the thing. Even if it didn't contract all the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
When they stopped the heart while it was beating, at one point, one set of those ventricles would be closed.
Right.
Because that's how the heart works.
It opens up one, and then it closes the
one
other.
One side opens.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. There are four ventricles. Comes in, then it closes, squirts the other one, closes another set, opens the other set, shoots out the other side, right?
Right.
That's how it works. The other thing is, why didn't they go into the lungs?
Well, they did end up going into the lungs eventually.
Did they? I don't remember them going into the lungs.
Yeah, they went into the lungs eventually, so actually...
But, I mean, the whole thing is, you go into the heart so that you can go into the lungs to get oxygenated, and then you go back out to the rest of the body.
Yeah.
Did they do that?
Well, remember, they made a stop off in the lungs and they caught a bunch of air.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Which goes back to the whole shrinking problem thing that we have to bring up later.
Yeah, exactly. That ties into it a little bit because, like, you know, but, you know, okay, so that's okay. That's jumping forward to the lungs. Let's keep talking about the heart. Like you were saying, yes, the ventricles would have closed, everything like this. When they restarted the heart again, though, would they not have been shot out of that heart so fast that the G-force would have slammed the tiny crew against the back of the hall and killed every one of them again?
I don't see. That's just it. It's so impossible that we don't have the physics for something like that, because it can't happen.
So other problems with the heart is, and this was noticed by Micro, the heart is too small, and it seems mostly made of something called chordae tendinae, and I am positive I'm pronouncing that wrong, which is basically rod-like tendons that connect the papillary muscles to the triscupid valve and
the
mitral valve in the heart. So it looks like it's made up of these tendray things, which I don't understand what they are. But apparently, according to a biologist, that's what it looks like. So for all of you biology nuts out there, now you have...
point out that the scales of what's inside the human body change a lot.
Yeah, everything's really off. Because they
look much bigger when they're going through the heart.
Mm-hmm.
These people are going into someone's brain. They're going to become a blood clot in a second if they stay the same scale that they are in the heart when they go to
exactly.
the brain. Okay, so they get out of the impasse heart, and where are they going next?
The impossible heart. So after that, they go through the pulmonary artery and into the capillaries, and so far that and basically that leads them into the lungs. So the capillaries, they work they're basically the refueling stations, from what I understand, for the oxygen to get into the blood.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the oxygen will seep through the layers inside of the lungs, get hit until they reach the capillaries, where blood cells are able to go in there, and they were able to refuel with the oxygen, they leave again. And actually, the blood cells, from what I understand, they have to squeeze into these capillaries. Capillaries, they're not much bigger than the blood cells themselves. So that, the capillaries in the movie were shown way too big because the blood cells would have had to squeeze in there.
Now, the capillaries inside the lungs, they're called alveoli.
Okay.
And they look like bunches of grapes.
Oh.
They look like bunches of grapes from the outside. So the bronchioles go down and they attach themselves to the alveoli. And that is where oxygen is exchanged between the blood vessels and from the outside. It's not magic. It just, there's a membrane there that's thin enough to allow the oxygen to penetrate that membrane without us having to bleed to death through our lungs. It's why lung disease can be so terrible. It's why, because if you get too much fluid in your lungs, then it prevents the absorption of oxygen through your alveoli, and then you literally just drown in your own, you know, if you're bleeding or if you have severe pneumonia or, you know, if you smoke a lot or whatever. I'm not saying if you smoke so much you'll drown, but, you know, if you damage the alveoli, that's a large number of lung diseases that people can get. You know, they basically attach, you have the bronchi, which split off into the two lungs, and then that goes into the bronchioles, which then go down to Alveoli. And so even though they didn't say that in the movie, that's technically what they were doing in order for them to pick up oxygen.
Yeah.
And how did they pick up oxygen in the movie?
Well, apparently they somehow used the lung, which had negative pressure, to fill up a hose, which would need to have positive pressure applied to it.
So you remember that when I told you about that whole thin membrane thing?
Yeah.
They stuck a tube out of the membrane?
Yeah, okay, so first of all, when they cut a hole into that membrane, why didn't all of the blood or plasma or whatever drain into the lung through that little hole?
Well, I think if, like, they're small enough, it's not going to make that big of a deal, I think.
I was wondering the same thing, too, and like, water molecules are pretty small, mm-hmm. so I wonder if it would be able to just be able to squeeze through there. I'm not 100% sure, but it seemed weird to me. Like that none of the water was gushing out through the fucking hole, and then he was just kind of floating around in there. So, but my biggest problem is that the membrane isn't like that.
No.
So there's more than a thin, single, impossibly thin cell between the blood vessel and the lung.
Yeah.
There are several layers of endothelial cells, connective tissue,
yep.
and fluids, membranes, and they're all used to diffuse the oxygen into the blood,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not just like plastic wrap where you can kind of just push through it like
right.
they did in the movie,
mm-hmm.
right? So they would have to go through an ass load of tissue to be able to get through there to put their little hose thing even through.
Yeah. I don't even know why they're doing it, considering that the atoms they're sucking up can't possibly be utilized by their bodies. Oh, I'm sorry, that's later on.
That's later on. But like, okay, so okay, and first of all, when he went into the lung, he would have just gotten blown the fuck away. And it would have bashed him around inside the lung, and that would have killed him too. I think that we need a death counter.
Stuck to the inside of the bronchial tubes.
Oh yeah, that's true. I think he would have just been like just torn apart, like inside of a fucking tornado. He's tiny, 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 tiny.
But remember, we don't know how the physics work, because if he's tiny like a mote, we don't tear apart things that we inhale normally, right?
Not normally, but things that are that small things that are that small are able to exist at that size, right?
Yeah, like viruses.
But the human body wasn't, like, our skin, the thickness of it, think of that, like, reduced to the size that they are. Our skin would be so impossibly thick, thin, that it's not like we're an ant or something like that. We're built to be on our size scale, whereas, like, if we shrunk down to that size, like, it would just be...
If we go by the movie science, they said they actually shrunk the atoms down. So, we'll deal with that later.
Yeah, we'll get into that. We'll get into that.
So I think your point is true. I think that they would probably get torn apart. They would not have the same physical reactions to other things that are made out of normal-sized atoms.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, like, just with the whole refueling of the hose. So when your lungs draw in air, all right, what happens is your ribs expand and your diaphragm contracts down. So mm-hmm. your lungs are actually able to expand, creating basically a vacuum, mm-hmm. right? A negative pressure, drawing in air through your mouth.
Yeah.
To fill up a tank, you would have to create positive pressure, forcing air through the hose. I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think that you'd be able to just fill a hose like that.
The hose would have to have some sort of vacuum attachment.
Yeah, and like, I don't know, like it just seems like to me the pressure inside of the tank itself mm-hmm. Would overcome the negative pressure, and it would just create like a vacuum barrier.
Hey, Professor Sharp.
Yeah.
Why did they need the oxygen in the first place?
To fill up their ballast tanks or something?
Was it their ballast tanks?
Oh, I might have the word wrong. I can't remember.
It may be their ballast tanks. I don't think they needed it to breathe. Right?
No, they definitely didn't need it to breathe. Because I remember the one line was like, all the air that we're going to have left is just what's in here to breathe.
Right. So they did the impossible thing.
Mm-hmm.
So where do they go now? Do we go to anywhere interesting, like the spleen? Ooh, I'd love to see the chemical processes that go on in the liver. Do we go there?
No. Actually,
how about
from
the stomach? Oh. The magic place where we tear apart things that came in from outside of our body and we turn into us. Well, not in the stomach. We just dissolve it in acid there and then we move it on to large intestine. Ooh, do we get to go in the large intestine and see how nutrients are absorbed? That would be cool.
No, Jason, from there we go to something called the pleural cavity.
What's that?
Well, basically the pleural cavity is a barrier between the lung and basically like a membrane on the outside of the lung.
Yeah.
And
here's a fun thing, guys. I suffer from, on occasion, I will get what's called pleurisy.
Oh.
And pleurisy is when you get a tiny infection on that very covering. And what that covering does is it prevents your lungs from sticking to the inside of your rib cage.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get a little tiny infection in there, it hurts a lot. Like, maybe you're having a heart attack.
Jesus, I bet that hurt. Oh, man, holy.
Because it's causing friction and rubbing when you breathe. It doesn't happen all that often, and they're really not certain what actually causes it, but when it happens, I don't enjoy myself very much. And the first time I got it, I thought I was having a heart attack at 21 years old.
Oh, man.
Even though everyone in the rig, yeah, an ambulance was called, told me, you have better blood pressure than anyone else in this rig, but we're taking you to the hospital anyway.
Holy crap. But it ended up turning out that it was just the...
It was just pleurisy, yeah.
Wow.
My grandmother suffered from it every once in a while as well.
Huh. So yeah. is it a hereditary thing? Or?
I don't know. I hope not.
Oh,
but
no doubt.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that was very interesting. So they go to the pleural cavity. You know what? The pleural cavity, I didn't notice they had a whole lot of problems with it. But I do know that we have an interview a little bit later. But
do you want to play the interview now? Does it pertain?
You know what? No, I think that we should play it just after this.
Okay.
Okay, so the pleural cavity seems fine. There are problems with it, but we'll get into that during the interview. So we go from the pleural cavity to the lymphatic system, and the lymphatic system is where I start seeing a lot of problems.
What's wrong with their lymphatic system?
Everything, Jason. Fucking absolutely everything is wrong with it. Okay, so first of all, this one, just right off the bat, the reticular fiber that they have that is basically like seaweed, and it hangs like stupid green garland.
Yeah.
And it like clogs all of their things. Okay,
suddenly we're in a Star Trek set.
Yes. I don't know. That was pretty cheap even for Star Trek. So the reticular fibers, they actually cross-link to form a meshwork, which is called reticulin. Mm-hmm. And none of these things were in a cross shape like that at all. Like, none of them were in a mesh. They just sort of hung there.
Yeah.
Like seaweed, because that's probably extra.
I think the prop people just got tired.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably just extra props they had from Thousand Leagues Under the Sea or something. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is the major problem that I have with the whole lymphatic system scene. Is they're going the wrong way.
Yeah.
That, like the complete wrong way. You can't actually go that way in the lymphatic system. So everything in the lymphatic system drains down towards, either one of two different sides. Okay, so the lymphatic system is basically has backflow prevention valves, and it looks like they're going the wrong direction. From what I understand, this is impossible, as lymphatic fluid only flows one way, and depending on if you were on the right or the left lymphatic duct, you'll enter and drain into the either subclavian vein or the jugular vein, putting them back at the start of the movie if they ended up in the jugular vein. Right? And I see
and
whether
they get
or not
sucked
they're
through
on
the fistula,
right or left.
And it starts all over again. It's inception inside the body.
Yeah,
not inception. It's
exactly. And I say
it's Groundhog
whether...
Day inside the body.
So I say whether or not they're on either the left or the right side, because it turns out that there's actually a plot hole in here that I can that I can bring up, because it's science related, huge science, right? Yeah, it's a science related plot hole. It makes a huge difference.
Okay.
Because if they're on the right side, they'll drain into one side of the they'll drain into the subclavian vein, I believe. Mm-hmm. But if they're on the left side, they'll drain into the jugular vein, like I said, putting them back at the start. apart. And that's an important difference. And they actually jump back and forth during the movie. when they're first injected, I believe they're on the right side. Or no, I think they're on the left side. And then later on in the movie, they always show the diagrams with him on the left side.
Yeah.
So
it was wrong.
So it was very, very wrong. And like I keep saying, like, you can only go one direction. Every few, well, I guess it would be leagues or knots or however you measure things in water, you would have a check valve that would never allow you to go back through. It's like a sphincter. It only goes one way.
But it's okay, because we're going to hit a point where nothing matters anymore.
Oh, and also, the other thing, too, is they would have been immediately detected in the lymphatic system.
You think?
Because because the lymphatic system not only controls excess fluid, but it's basically like border security. And liquid that passes through it, it's basically scanned for bad things. You know, like body terrorists or innocent Syrian children. And it alerts the immune system.
So, where are we? Where did we go? Where are we going now?
Okay, so now that we've gone through the lymphatic system, we go into the inner ear, and this is where I think that we need to play the interview, because it brings up some glaring problems about about how we got here.
Okay, I'll try to be extra quiet during the travel through the inner ear, and your interview with whom?
My interview with our good friend and frequent commenter on the show, Microblogginism.
Our chief critic.
Yeah, and our chief critic. And you know what? We'll throw to Aaron in the field right now. Take it away, Aaron. Thank you very much, professors. Today we have another professor, Mr. Microblogginism, who is actually an expert on biology and a friend of the show. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the directions that the crew took through the body and what organs they went through and how they don't really connect all that well. Why don't you take it away, Micro?
Thank you. So, they start off in the circulatory system and going through the heart and going through the pulmonary artery and ending up next to the lung.
Right.
All of that, that's fine. Like, that's connected. That's your circulatory system. But then they end up in the pleural cavity somehow, which is this as the sac around the fluid-filled sac around the lung.
Right, yeah, the pleural cavity, and they traveled through there, and they were saying that if it gets inflamed, then you'll start to cough, and then that would be the end of everybody.
Yeah.
Okay.
There isn't, that's closed off. There isn't a connection between the circulatory system or the lymphatic system, which is where they go next. All the exchange of fluid is done through the cells.
Through the cells. Oh, okay.
Yeah, a lot of the motion, movement of things in the body is actually done by the cell picking it up on one side and spitting it out on the other.
Okay.
But yeah, and then they end up in the lymphatic system somehow. there isn't a connection.
Yeah, there's no connection there at all, is there?
No, there really isn't. And they follow that against the stream of the lymph. They end up going into the inner ear, into what's called the endolymph, which is, it's like a spiral, like a tube inside your skull bone, where there's two closed off membranes inside it, like tubes inside it. And the innermost of these is the, contains what's called the endolymph. Now, it might be called endolymph, but that's just because lymph just means water, sort of.
So it doesn't actually have anything to do with the lymph nodes. It's just called the endolymph, and it doesn't actually.
Yeah,
because it seems like there would be a pathway from the lymphatic system to the place in the inner ear that is also called lymph. But you're saying that there's no pathway to there either?
Yeah.
Really?
It's closed off because it has to have a specific salt content. The sensing cells inside it that sense your balance and your hearing, they need that special salt concentration to work, because that's like neurons and sensory cells work by having ions, salt, flow through special channels. So the salt content actually affects them. So they're like, that's closed off.
So then from the inner ear, they seem to be traveling what looks like past a set of small inner ear bones. And then from there, they go up.
Well, they actually go back, because the small bones in your middle ear, like, they're in your middle ear. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
which is actually full of like air. There's a connection to your throat. That's why you yawn when you have to relieve pressure in an airplane, because it opens that duct. Yeah, there is a connector, but it's full of air. And they seem to just be like, still be able to like sail in it, even though that's not fluid over.
Yeah, exactly. So they're actually floating through air. They would need a blimp at that point, basically.
Yeah. And then they go back, like the way they came, into the, it's called the paralymphatic duct, or bony labyrinth, the place they enter. There's no connection between there and the middle ear, because if there were, all the fluid would flow out, and you wouldn't be able to hear.
It would just all drain into your ear, yeah.
And you wouldn't be able to hear.
Okay. So they travel from the inner ear. I believe they travel from the inner ear to the brain at that point, or was the inner ear after the brain? I can't remember exactly, but somehow they get to the brain.
Yeah, that's one of the few places where they actually would be able to get there. Because there is a connection.
From the inner ear and the brain, or from the...
From the bony labyrinth. Yeah. There's a connection there that goes into the subarachnoid space, which is... The brain is surrounded by membranes called meninges. That's what you get when you get meningitis. That's what gets inflamed.
And it's also a funny word, menji.
Yeah, it is. But it's made of three layers, and between two of those layers, there is a space called this subarachnoid space, where that's full of cerebral spinal fluid, the same thing that's inside your spine and around the rest of your brain. And you can't get, like, there's a connection there, and then they would get into that, but in order to get into the rest of the brain, they would have to go through what's called, there's three apertures in that, like, They're basically holes,
and those apertures they're roughly around the base of the skull.
Well, yeah, they're around like your brainstem and your small brain, your cerebellum. That's what it's called in English. Then things start to get weird, because so far they have at least been like things that are next to each other, but now, like after fixing the brain and stuff, now they travel next to the optic nerve, which for some reason actually has light in it. Which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
And then they say they're going to get to the tear duct. But the thing is, the optic nerve just ends at the eye. They're either going to end up inside the eye, because the optic nerve actually goes into the eye and then spreads out. Because God, in his infinite wisdom, yeah, let's go there, decided to put all the wiring in front of the camera sensor, basically. All the rods and cones are behind all of the nerves that pick up the signal and send it into your brain. That's why you have a blind spot in your eye, because that's where the optic nerve goes through it.
So if they actually went through there, they would end up inside the eyeball itself and not inside the tear ducts at all?
Yeah, they will either end up inside the eye, or depending on how they follow it and exactly where they are, they seem to be following it outside. Like on the outside of it. So they would actually just end up, you just like stop, like a dead end. And then like it becomes a little sketchy if they actually enter the tear duct, or if they just like get outside the eye and just get out in the corner. In either case, there isn't a connection there. They would either have to go out and travel like in a lot of other tissues, or they would have to go out and travel behind the eye and somehow climb around it.
Yeah, because there's no way to actually get from the optic nerve into the tear duct. That doesn't make any sense. So
no, the tear duct is like a small gland that sits in your eye, like in the corner of your eye.
Yeah, exactly. So then there would have been no way for them to get into the tear duct, no way for the guy to start crying, and then them end up inside of that little tiny pool of water splashing around. And so it wouldn't have worked at all. They would have been trapped behind that dude's eye, and they would have expanded and blown his skull apart.
Yeah, which for some reason would be suicide for them, which doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. They would just split his brain apart.
That's excellent. So on a related topic, you gave me a bunch of notes for this movie, and I noticed that you are from Denmark, but your notes are all in English. Why is that?
Well, because the movie was in English.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Micro. It's been a pleasure talking with you. And if we have more biology questions in the future, hopefully you'll be around to answer them.
Thank you for having me on, and I look forward to correcting you.
That was great.
I thought it was amazing. Just
I love it.
Absolutely amazing.
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, so it turns out that there's no way that they could have gotten from the lung into the lymphatic system and then into the inner ear because there's no pathways that fucking lead there.
Yeah, but we're getting to that point in the movie where it doesn't matter anymore. They literally just pop into places. They're just like, oh, look, now we're in the bones. What? Yeah, no, how did you
exactly.
get there?
How did you get in there? That doesn't make any sense. Like, you're just randomly showing up in places now. Did you use one of those Acme holes where you just kind of throw it on the wall and jump through it?
And
once again,
the whole thing where everyone has to be extra quiet because you don't want any turbulence.
Yeah, okay, so first of all, Jason, did you notice how they all found out not to make any noise in that scene?
I don't remember.
It was over a loudspeaker. The Admiral told everybody in the room to not make any noise because it could kill everybody in the ship over a loudspeaker. So again, showing how it would immediately kill them just by going into that area.
I'm getting really sick of being inside of Mr. Bean. Are we in the brain yet?
Inside of Mr. Bean? No, we're still inside the inner ear, so okay.
He's Mr. Bean now. I don't care.
He is. It's true. Okay, don't worry, Jason. We have the inner ear, and there's only a few problems there, and then we have the brain. We're almost at the brain. We're almost at the good stuff.
Almost there. Okay, so where we go now?
Okay, so we're in the inner ear. So
yes.
the first major problem that I have, and we'll go into this a little bit later when we're talking about how they get shrunk, is that sound waves, when you're that size, would be more like gusts of air or vibrations or something like that.
I think it would probably be pressure differentiation.
Yeah, exactly. It would, like, so you have to imagine the eardrum, which is right close to where they are, would be working more like a giant subwoofer, producing sound frequencies so low that we couldn't hear it as those tiny little people because of our size, right?
Yeah.
Just the larger or smaller that you are, the difference the difference the frequency would be that you would be able to speak and hear.
Mm-hmm.
So
I have a whole thing about how things would be different if you were actually that size.
Oh, okay. Did you want to go through that, or did you want to do that when we're talking about
Sure. If you were that small, you'd be blind, deaf, mute, and probably cold. Because let's say you could shrink down that size. Our bodies are, I hate using this word, but designed.
Mm-hmm.
I hate using the word design. But our bodies function, how about that, in the scale that we are right now, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So let's pretend that we then shrink ourselves down to that size. Our eyes won't work anymore because our irises are now five. I don't know what scale. They never say really what scale. I think they said that the ship is 1 micrometer. I don't know what a micrometer is.
They said that it would be the size. I think that they said that they would be the size of a bacteria or no, a single cell or something like that.
Yeah. So that's the size of the ship.
Yeah. Exactly.
And they
look roughly the same size as the blood cells that they were floating around.
Exactly. So if you're going to go down that size, your irises are now way too small to absorb enough light to see.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because your eyes are designed to, you know, absorb a certain amount of light. Now, they are so small that they cannot gather enough light for us to see correctly. So, you've basically gone blind. Our ears are designed to pick up sounds in waves as we exist now. If we shrink down, the frequency of those sounds would be I think that they are too low?
Yeah, too low. They would be
too
inaudible.
Low for us to hear.
It would just seem like tremors or gusts of wind. And
yeah, exactly. We would be mute because our vocal cords, which are designed to work in this atmosphere at the size that we're at, they would vibrate, but they would be too high for anyone to hear.
Way too high. It would be so hilariously high that even dogs could barely hear you, or even they might not even be able to hear you at all.
Uh-huh. And then there's the problem with surface area. We have enough surface area, which regulates our body, keeps us warm.
Mm-hmm.
When we shrink shrink down that small, we have a real problem maintaining our body heat, you know? Even if we shrink down to, like, the size of a mouse,
mm-hmm.
we would be constantly cold. I don't even want to know how cold we would be
if we shrank down
past that point to be able to live comfortably with several dozen other people inside of a human cell.
No, and, like, another thing, too, your body would be unable to metabolize oxygen because the oxygen molecules couldn't fit through the fucking capillaries. They just it wouldn't work. you want to know one thing that would be really cool about being shrunk down to that size though?
What?
You would be able to run a whole lot faster because involving some sort of fancy math called the Froude number, but none of that would matter because the violent contraction of every cell in your body would surely rupture all of your organs at once.
To the shrinking part.
Did you want to just talk about the shrinking bit?
No, and let's get through the body. We've gone through everything else. We may as well get to this ending part.
Okay, all right. Well, all right. So there is one more really, really big problem with the ear itself. And do you want to know what that is?
What is it?
Okay. When they're going through the ear canal, and Microbloganism brought this up in the interview,
mm-hmm.
they're traveling through liquid, but that part, it's filled with air. Inside of your ear is filled with air. And like I said at the very beginning of the of this whole podcast, submersibles don't fly. They sink. That's the point.
Well, this submersible does somehow without wings.
Maybe that's why they needed to stop at the lungs to get a bunch of air so they could actually inflate a fucking balloon above them and
an invisible
through.
One.
So behind your eardrum, right, is mm-hmm. the cavity inside the inner ear. Is the cavity inside the inner ear. And that cavity is filled with air. You'll notice that, like Micro said, when you go up in an airplane, you'll actually have your ears pop.
Yeah.
And basically what that is relieving pressure from that cavity back down inside of your nasal passages.
Mm-hmm.
And it can also create a vacuum and suck air back up inside of there. None of that has fluid inside of it. And mm-hmm. if it did have fluid inside of it, that would be horribly, horribly bad because then you'd have basically bleeding inside of your inner ear and mm-hmm. you wouldn't be able to hear anything.
Yeah, that's bad.
That's not a good thing at all. So, yeah. And also the antibodies was wrong. They're just wrong. It was basically a great scene because mm-hmm. all of the actors kind of just, well, you know, they basically just groped that girl, but
yeah.
it was all wrong. That doesn't happen. They don't crystallize on a submolecular level. That's not a thing.
No.
It seems completely made up and was done for no reason.
But they had to have some sort of boogie monster in there at some point.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and very important.
So here's what we're talking about. They get out of the Proteus.
Okay, yeah.
To swim.
They do an extra vehicular activity.
They're in the brain, right?
No, right now they're inside the inner ear.
Wait, is that when they get attacked by the leukocytes?
Yeah, I think that was when they're in their inner ear, which is even more impossible because
so the leukocytes flew through the air?
They're flying leukocytes.
I thought they got out when they... Okay, yeah. For some reason, I thought they got out when they were in the brain to go swim to the clot to take care of it.
Well, no, they did. But before that, they had to stop inside of the inner ear to pull all the seaweed off. And while that was happening, the tendray or whatever the fuck it was called.
Uh-huh.
And so they pulled all that off. And while they were doing that, it was the really intense scene where all the scientists had to stay really still. And then the girl dropped the scissors and it made a big sound and a bunch of hijinks ensue, right? And when that happened, it shook the girl loose, and she landed mm-hmm. inside of a bunch of hairs, which is what activated the immune system, even though they just went through the lymphatic system, which would have mm-hmm. found them and killed them immediately.
Which,
but no,
by the
instead,
way, there was a little bit of thing that they said at the very beginning that makes absolutely no sense at all. Do you remember what they said?
Maybe.
They said, we're going to shrink it down, we're going to inject you in. You have to get out in an hour, because if you start growing, then the body's immune system will recognize you. as an intruder and attack you.
Yeah, I know.
If that's how our immune system worked, we'd all be dead. That's every single one of us, we'd be dead. We'd be so dead. Oh my god.
It's not like your immune system discriminates on size. It's like, oh, they're, you're all small bunch enough of size to get queens. By. Don't worry about it. It's too small.
I'm of the feeling that they would have gotten attacked the instant they entered the bloodstream. And they would have been under attack constantly, no matter where they went.
Right, no, exactly. So, now I do know that the lymphatic system, which is, like I said, it's like basically the first defense. When you get scrapes and abrasions and shit like that, the ducts of the lymphatic system are actually right around that layer of skin. So whenever any germs or whatever, and you have like fucking all kinds of viruses all over your arms and all over your all of your skin all the time, right? So as soon as you get an abrasion, it ends up inside of that layer. Well, that's why the lymphatic system exists. Well, part of the reason why is to immediately find those things and destroy them. When it's directed directly squeezed into your blood, another thing happens. So basically, inside of your veins and arteries, they actually have tiny little branching off veins that connect in between the two that have the lymphatic system running through there again. Mm-hmm. And it'll actually squeeze all kinds of bad things through those, and that's how it can find some of the bad stuff inside of your bloodstream.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the body has lots of natural defenses. Mm-hmm. They would have been found immediately and killed so many times. I keep saying this.
Let's just get to the brain.
one thing that I have to say very, very quickly, though, is that those antibodies, again, would have had nothing to bind to because they actually have to bind to a specific molecular structure based on their chemistry.
Which includes wetsuit.
Yeah, exactly. They would have nothing to bind to, so that's impossible. So now moving to the brain.
Oh, yeah, wetsuit, not a pressure suit?
Yeah.
Just a wetsuit.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Just bringing that up, because I would think that pressure would have a lot to do with being super small and frail human bodies and stuff like that.
Mr. Bean has extremely low blood pressure.
Very low blood pressure.
He has blood pressure of exactly one atmosphere.
Let's get in the brain!
Okay, let's get in the brain.
So what happens in the brain?
Okay, so the very first thing that I noticed, is this not the first thing you noticed, is why are those neurons moving so slowly?
I don't know. Because he's retarded? No, I don't know why.
Jason, Jesus.
Also, does the brain work like that?
No, I don't think that the brain is usually... I don't think that it's made up of Halloween cobwebs with cartoon sparks flying through it.
Now, let me put it to you this way. How small would they have to be able to float through the neurons of someone's brain?
One fuck of a lot smaller than they were when they were going through the capillaries or the heart, that's for sure.
Yeah. Are they even in a vein at this point?
No, they're not. No, they're basically floating around in cerebral spinal fluid stuff that's actually surrounding the brain. They're not even inside of anything yet.
Now, the blood clot was supposed to be in operable, meaning that they couldn't reach it with conventional surgical techniques.
Exactly.
So in order for that to be true, that means they have to be deep inside the brain, or the clot needs to be at a place where if they fuck up, and the likelihood is that they would probably fuck up, that they would either kill or impair the patient.
Yes.
Right?
Indeed.
If they're only on the surface, then why didn't they just take care of this conventionally?
I don't know. I don't understand why at all.
Okay, so anyway.
It seems like there are a million better ways to do this than to shrink people down impossibly and inject them inside of somebody's brain.
They get to the clot, right?
Yeah.
What does the clot look like?
The clot looks like a big bundle of Halloween cobwebs bunched together in black.
Hey, does it look like it's made out of blood cells?
No, it doesn't. It looks like it's made out of brain cells, actually, from what they depicted brain cells to look like in the movie.
Is that what a blood clot is?
No. I think the keyword in blood clot is possibly blood.
They're not even in a vein. It's just kind of there. There's no vein that's where it's trapped. There's nothing there. Now, no. Here's one of the things about a blood clot. It will get up to the brain where the arteries become very, very, very small. Mm-hmm. And a couple of things could happen. It'll stop blood flow to a very specific part of the brain, thus starving the brain of both sugar and oxygen, mm-hmm. which it desperately needs to function. Or it'll actually hemorrhage and you'll bleed into the brain. Okay? Those are two things that happen when you get a blood clot in the brain. There's no vein feeding this clot.
No, exactly.
We don't see a whole
sitting there.
We don't see a whole bunch of blood cells sitting there going, "What do we do now?" It's just like it's just like hanging out there, like it just formed.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so that's stupid.
That is stupid.
And then we have all of the spy foo, right?
The spy foo.
Because in the plot of the thing, they determine that they have a saboteur, and one of them's a spy, and it doesn't matter what's going on. And then they have a fight, and then the Proteus crashes?
Yeah, well, you know what? We can even talk about the spy and his obvious communist motivation, because he's clearly an atheist, and
that's
a scientific bad thing. well, okay, so you know what? It is. It does have to do with science, because he actually brings up an interesting question when he's talking. They are arguing amongst themselves, they have some dialogue that says something along the lines of, "Yet all the suns that light the corridors of the universe shine dim before the blazing of a single thought," and very going on. And the bad guy, Michael, says, "Very poetic, gentlemen. Seems to be a great deal out there. Let me know when you pass the soul." And interesting, they didn't. So they got that right.
Anyway, the ship crashes. Bad guy gets killed by leukocytes, doesn't he? Yeah, he gets eaten.
Yeah, he got. Yeah, if that's what it was, it just looked like a white puffy cloud thing. There's another scientific plot hole that I can talk about here too. The white puffy cloud leukocyte thing goes through the top of the dome of the submarine without filling the entire thing with water or fluid.
That doesn't
happen because
at this point
science.
No one cares because the next thing that happens is they clear the clot, but they're almost out of time and they're going to start growing again.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So they swim from wherever they are in the brain to the tear ducts.
Yeah, from the optic nerve to the eye.
So let's go through this, shall we? They mm-hmm. go... Wait, they traveled up the optic nerve? Is that what they said?
Yeah, they traveled up the optic nerve. But, like, I don't understand if they went, like, along the side of it, or if they went up inside of it, or what. But either one of those create incredibly big problems.
Mm-hmm. There's no room for them to maneuver. They're not traveling inside the veins. I didn't say that. They're
exactly.
Swimming.
Yeah.
They somehow just swam past things. Because there's a lot of air in the brain. And then they got to the optic nerve, swam up the optic nerve. They did this in like 3 minutes, guys.
Yeah.
They did it in 3 minutes. What would have been 25 miles to them or more, they did in 3 minutes.
Exactly. Then, it took them literally forever. It took them like a 2-hour movie just to get the fucking submarine from the heart to the brain. And that's not a far journey, right?
No, they did it in less than an hour, according to movies.
Oh, okay. Well, less
than an hour.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Okay. Fine. Fair enough. And we've seen how well countdowns work in this movie, too. We only have 60 seconds. 90 seconds later.
They go up the optic nerve, which is fine. There's a little hole in the skull that'll allow them to pass through, right?
Sure,
I suppose. Because the optic nerve has to pass the skull to the brain.
Yeah, but I don't think that hole is, like, built to accommodate, like, a bunch of other things other than the nerve.
No, it would be a tight squeeze.
Like, how would they do that without creating damage to the nerve? I don't know if that's... How would they do that?
Then they swim along the no space between your eyeball and the inside of your eye socket.
They, like, just keep continuously just changing size. It doesn't matter anymore.
And then somehow they get inside the tear duct, right?
Yeah.
And then they get cried out.
Yeah.
And they win.
And what did you notice that he found them by looking at them through a fucking magnifying glass? And
yeah,
not a
remember,
microscope.
These guys are supposed to be the size smaller than a cell.
Yeah, but he's seen them through a magnifying glass.
Well, he's doctor. They don't call him Dr. Peepers for nothing. He gets them. gets them
this
off.
This is
of
the shittiest shit science. Fuck the 60s.
We haven't even gotten to the shrinking part.
No,
yet.
We haven't even gotten there yet.
This was just the human body.
Oh my god, that was so batshit wrong.
Okay, time to switch gears. Let's put on our physicist hat.
All right.
People can't shrink. You can't shrink anything. The end. End of podcast.
Can you shrink matter? No.
No. Shrink atoms? No.
No. Okay. Do you want to know why we can't shrink matter? Okay.
Go for it.
A relatively simple calculation finds that the average radius given for an atom is determined by various fundamental constants, such as the mass and charge of the electron, the dielectric permittivity, which basically governs the strength of an electric field, and like the Planck's constant, which is determines the scale of quantum effects. But none of that matters, because the only thing that you have to remember about those things is that, and they all have this one thing in common, they're all constant and not open to any change at all. By changing them changes the fundamental laws of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said before, creating a rift in space, engulfing the entire universe and destroying all life as we know it, and physics and everything. So,
right. So let's play pretend that somehow they broke that law.
Okay.
And they actually shrank people down. Now, as we discussed before, there would be problems with being able to see, hear, talk, be alive.
Sure, but there are actual physical problems that you have to think of as well, mm-hmm. right? Like, and it all depends on the way that they do it. So So first of all, you can't just add or remove atoms, because like when you remove them, like that would just tear the bodies apart and create like a big pool of mess. And when you tried to put them back, like how could you put them back in the same position? You would need a Heisenberg compensator to fucking do that kind of shit. because like you're all Star Trek fans out there, you know that this is impossible. And
no. It's not.
No, of course not, Jason. Just keep holding out hope.
None of it is possible. The whole premise doesn't work.
Yeah. Okay, so, and you can't just squeeze atoms closer together, because the atoms in your body are already as close together as they can get, right? Like, you're solid matter, mm-hmm. you know? And if you were to crush a person down that size, you would basically be crushing all of the carbon in their body into a fucking diamond. That's all you would have done. You would have created human diamonds.
Uh-huh. Here's another fun thing. If they didn't... just because you say you're shrinking the atoms doesn't mean that you're necessarily shrinking the mass.
No,
so
exactly.
These little tiny microscopic diamond people would be as heavy as if they were fully grown. So when you dropped them into the person, his neck would explode.
Okay, so...
As you dropped a ton of submarine and people into his neck.
And it busts through the whole fucking the back of his head, through
the
table.
It just blows out
the
back of his neck.
The bottom of the floor.
Oh, that didn't work.
Mr. Bean is very dead at this point, and a bloody, bloody mess.
I'm afraid I'm dead.
Well, actually, not a bloody mess. It would just all shoot through one teeny tiny one. I don't even know if that would kill him.
I don't know what it would do.
You know what?
I honestly,
like, because it would just be one cell, so it would just shoot through. It would act like a fucking bullet, hit terminal velocity, mm-hmm. and hit the ground, and probably bury itself like 6 inches deep.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Interesting.
That doesn't matter. The physics of this, let me put it to you this way. The physics of this is so stupid.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, like, let's talk. So, how could they do it if they wanted to do it? And I was able to find
that out. I couldn't find anything in regards to that.
No, I did find something. Okay. For in order to change your size, you would need to do something impossible. Namely, take a collection of constants, like I talked about before, that determines the size of the atom in your body and make them non-constant and subject to change. So you would have to change the magnitude of these constants, for example, the Planck's constant, which is already a pretty small number, and you need to make it become 10 times smaller, then the resulting effects would be that everything would be reduced, right? So when you do that, it basically makes your mass lighter as well, because you're fucking with the constants of the universe, right? So if you make your size smaller in that way, then shrinking the atoms like they said that they were doing, then you're also shrinking the mass of the atoms too in mm-hmm. some sort of way. Like all of this is world breaking physics. Like none of this works. But if that was to happen, then like I said before, then they would be lighter than air. They would just they would evaporate. They would disappear into mm-hmm. nothingness.
Yeah. Like I said, it can't happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Period.
Like,
full stop.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, if the mass doesn't scale along with you, then you become a diamond. If it scales along with you, then you evaporate. Like,
it's just like you said, we've created a ray that turns everyone into rubber dildos. That can't happen either. That's the same thing. If the plot was, we're going to inject rubber dildos into this person's body, but we're going to turn you into them, that's just as feasible as shrinking everyone down. And also this submarine. The more I say it out loud, the stupider this movie becomes.
But don't get us wrong. The movie is great. It's a great movie, but...
Do you think you can get the clot, Doctor? I don't know. It's 50-50. We should shrink down a bunch of people and inject them into the body.
You're right. It's possibly the only way.
Quick, get the little tiny radar dishes and put them around them.
Oh my God, the radar dishes! That remember,
because you know what? Radio waves don't travel through your body.
No, and they detect radiation, not radio waves.
Oh, I thought that because they could only communicate through telegraph, right?
Well, yeah, but how was it that they were okay? So I figured that the reason why they had the little radio things hooked up there was to detect the radiation being emitted off of the tiny radioactive particle, which, by the way, you probably wouldn't even notice because, spoilers, every human being has a certain amount of radioactive particles inside of them.
Yeah, and also, you just shrank down that radioactive particle, technically.
Oh, no, that was the only thing they couldn't shrink.
Our radioactive particles?
Yeah, they couldn't shrink radioactive particles, but somehow they are able to shrink the atoms in everything else.
Okay, can I say this? Wouldn't they have to contain the radioactive particle?
They did. Yeah, they did. Remember at the beginning they had it inside of that little glass chamber, and they had the dialogue about, like, oh it's
glass,
so small.
That's right. That always contains radiation. I forgot that if you were standing in front of a nuclear explosion, if you had a pane of glass right in front of you, you'd be perfectly fine.
Right, exactly.
Glass, nature's miracle.
It's amazing stuff.
But it wasn't even leaded glass.
No.
It was, because my whole point is
it wasn't even tinted glass. They couldn't even put a limo tint on that thing.
Okay, Professor Sharp, time for final grades.
Okay. I don't think that this is going to be shocking to anybody. My grade was an F. It got literally everything wrong.
It was that really entertaining special needs child.
It was just
spinning and laughing and having a great old time, but it didn't have a thought in its fucking head.
I didn't even bother putting this through my fancy grading program. I knew this one. It just did not get, and it had no redeeming qualities. I said to Jason at the beginning of this podcast, I said, I hope that you have some redeeming qualities because I want to give this movie a better grade. And he said, I hope the same thing.
They just got shot into some frickin' 1960s freak out and said it was the human body.
Yeah.
They may as well have traveled to the terror zone or some other dimension.
Man, they...
to get the blood clot.
The negative zone.
Yeah, they went to the negative zone.
They floated around through a bunch of really cheap-looking, used special effects from various movies, bad mm-hmm. green screen, and lava lamps, and then
the movie's
called
colorful,
it a body.
It touches on the Cold War, you know, the it's script is good.
Yeah,
it
it's a great movie.
By Isaac Asimov, and so
and actually the base, the book that it was based on, it actually goes into more detail about all kinds of things, because also, like, things that we didn't even touch on, like what happens to the size of the what happens to the pieces of the ship after they get dissolved, like those.
Yeah,
would
guys,
have expanded.
Because here's a huge plot hole. They leave and then they return back to normal, but the ship's still inside the dude's brain.
Exactly.
How come the ship didn't go back to normal size and just his head just explode?
What happened to the, like, 800 liters of shrunken liquid that they injected into him through the needle? Like,
what What happened to the body of the guy that was being digested by leukocytes?
Oh, I know what happened.
What?
Quaid. Quaid.
Yeah, I've got to agree. This movie gets an F.
Yeah.
Gets an F. Fun movie, but fun doesn't mean accurate, does it?
No, it was not accurate at all.
You know what we forgot to do before we started the podcast?
Talk about what movie we want to talk about next time.
Talk about what movie we want to do next.
Okay, well, I have a huge list. If you want to cut this bit, I'll go through a few of them.
You got to choose the last one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. If you know some.
I don't, but I think I know what we're going to do.
Okay. Oh, I got a whole bunch more today, too, so.
Hey, guys, there's something that we really haven't covered. Ooh. And that is we really haven't gotten an alien on our dissection table, have we?
Oh, no, we haven't.
We've talked about aliens when we did War of the Worlds.
But we've never gotten one, like, in our hands and put it down on the table yet.
That's right. And there's only one movie alien that I can think of where we know a lot about, and at least they've talked about an awful lot.
Oh, really?
And I think it's time that we put on our hazmat suits that are protective against acid.
Ooh, something tells me we're going to be talking about E.T.
No, I'm talking about that other more famous alien, the Xenomorph from Alien.
Oh, good.
The next movie we're going to be doing is Alien. And I think, just for time's sake, we can skip the spaceship and all that other stuff and just concentrate on the reproductive cycle and biology of the Xenomorph from Alien. What do you think?
I like that. I think that sounds great.
Yeah. So tune in next time where, hopefully, neither one of us will get a facehugger and discover firsthand and the reproductive cycle of the Xenomorphs from Alien. And remember, if you guys had problems with anything that we said during this show, or if you just want to add some more information, please go to the Let Me Listen website, go to their contact page, and leave a message there, or leave a message on SoundCloud. We love being told that we're wrong, don't we?
We love it. It's one of our most favorite things.
I would like to thank Professor Sharp and Microbloganism for the wonderful interview for this show.
Yeah, thanks, Jason.
Why do you thank me? I didn't do anything. I just put it in the show.
You thank me for the... I'm just doing my podcasting job.
You're welcome. I guess.
Thank you for existing, Jason. You're a bright, shining star, and you make everyone's day joyous.
So, from everyone at the Cinetific Institute, thank you for listening. Once again, this has been Professor Jason Harding.
And I'm Professor Aaron Sharp, and we put the science in fiction.
That's what we do.
It's true. That's why we're doing it right now.
We put on gloves and we cram it right into the butthole of science.
Jason, damn it!
I couldn't help it. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Cinetific is a Let Me Listen podcast production with Aaron Sharp and Jason Harding. Produced by Jason Harding. Music composed and performed by Kevin MacLeod. You can find more Let Me Listen podcasts at our website at lemmelistenpodcasts.com. You can also find us on Stitcher, SoundCloud, and iTunes under Let Me Listen. Please subscribe and leave us a review. You can also find us on Facebook, Pinterest, and Twitter. Cinetific is also a listener-supported podcast. If you would like to contribute just $1 a month to support this podcast, or any of the other podcasts that Let Me Listen produces, please visit our page at Patreon. Just search for Let Me Listen Podcasts, or you can click the Patreon link on our website. And thanks for listening.